I want to start the presentation today by thanking Father Thomas for the invitation, for having invited me to be here today. I'm thrilled and honored to be here speaking about the miracle of the sun, that formidable event that took place on a Saturday, October 13th, 1917 in Fatima, Portugal. So my background is in electrical engineering. I have no formal training in philosophy or theology, so I must start by acknowledging how much I've learned over the years with the great resources of the Mystic Institute. Some acknowledgements before I begin. So I'm thankful for the team at the Archive of the Sanctuary of Fatima. In particular, thank you to Dr. Marco Daniel Duarte, André Melícias and Luis Oliveira. The multi-decade project of publishing a critical edition of the Fatima documentation is what enabled me to do my work. Without that edition, it would be impossible to navigate on the primary sources. I also want to thank Sister Gertrudes Ferreira for her valuable help while working at the Formigão Archive. And a big thank you also to Father Philippe Dallaire, a teacher here in Rome at Santa Croce, for sharing with me his scientific findings and insights. In this talk, I will introduce you to the scientific interpretation of the miracle of the sun made by the physicist and priest Stanley Yaki. By searching for a scientific interpretation, he was wrongly seen by some as questioning the miracle. One of my goals today is to clarify Father's stance on this topic. Father was very critical of those authors who believe that the sun on that day actually moved outside of its astronomical orbit. Here's what Father said about them, quote, "In addition to their revealing inconsistency, those authors are also guilty on a basic score. They failed to do their homework," end quote. What inconsistency did Father Yaki have in mind? And what kind of homework was he talking about? This talk will answer these and other questions on the miracle of the sun, and I just wish that by the end of this talk, you will all think that I've done my homework. So the title that I picked comes from one of Father Yaki's books. With this title, you get the hint that according to Father, the miracle of the sun might not actually be about the sun after all, but let's get started. Father Yaki was Hungarian by birth and a Benedictine priest. He had two doctorates in systematic theology and in physics, with the interesting detail that Father Yaki did his PhD under Victor Hess, who had won the Nobel Prize in Physics back in 1936 for his work on cosmic rays. Father was an honorary member of the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, and after he retired from his teaching career, Father decided to dedicate some time to the miracle of the sun. And thank you, Father, for that. In 1998, he made three trips to Portugal, to study in the archives of the Sanctuary of Fatima. This was in July, in November, and in December that year. He brought back home a big folder filled with Xerox copies of eyewitness testimonies and old newspaper articles. He published a book and a booklet on this topic shortly after. And then on April the 7th, 2009, our Lord called Father Yaki when he was in Madrid on his way back home. I also want to dedicate this presentation, to his memory, with deep gratitude for his lifelong work, and I also to dedicate the presentation to Our Lady of the Rosary of Fatima in reparation for the sins against her Immaculate Heart. Father Yaki's thoughts on the miracle of the sun are mainly found in these three books, although Father also wrote several articles on the topic. First, his book-length treatment of the miracle of the sun, God and the Sun at Fatima. This book has almost 400 pages and is filled with translations of eyewitness accounts of the miracle of the sun, and I'm not aware of any other book with so many translated into English. Then we have his booklet, The Sun's Miracle or of Something Else, which is a masterpiece of synthesis covering the complex topic in just 30 pages, as you can see by the thinness of this book. And finally, I'm also going to be quoting from chapter 13 of his intellectual autobiography, A Mind's Matter. And what got me interested in the miracle of the sun was reading his first book on the topic, and I was in shock by discovering that there were so many testimonies of the miracle of the sun. So beware, I'm Portuguese, so this was a shock, you know, to discover this via a Hungarian priest, and realizing that being a native speaker, I should actually go and find the original Portuguese sources, and so I did. So I wrote a book in 2017, in Portuguese for now, containing 150 eyewitness accounts. And my work builds on Father Yaki's work and also on other sources and authors. My findings so far have corroborated Father's interpretation of the miracle of the sun. But how did Father Yaki embark on this journey when he was almost 74 years of age? Let's hear it from him. Quote, "In mid-March 1998, I began to be drawn into the subject, usually referred to as the miracle of the sun. My training as a physicist, as a historian, and yes, a theologian alike, imposed on me the conviction that whatever can be known about the miracle of the sun, it must come from eyewitness accounts. Whether God and Sanat Fatima will be judged as one of my best books, I cannot decide. For me, it ranks high among those books of mine that I most enjoyed writing." To help us set the stage, let's see how the weather was in Western Europe that Saturday morning. As we can see from historical data, the whole of Portugal, northern Spain, and most France was under showers. 10 to 20 meters per day in Portugal, that's moderate raining, but it's enough to explain an overcast sky, or at least a clouded one. The epicenter of the miracle of the sun is the village of Fatima. According to the 1911 census, Fatima was a small parish with 800 inhabitants. Especially because of the apparitions, Fatima is now very different, as a city with more than 13,000 citizens. From May the 13th to October the 13th, 1917, three shepherd children, Jacinta, Lucia, and Francisco, claimed to see Our Lady in a field called Cova de Iria, that belonged to Lucia's family. Cova means a hollow place, while Iria is the Portuguese name of Saint Irene of Tomar, a Christian martyr during Visigothic times. Jacinta and Francisco Marte were brothers, and Lucia was their older cousin. And you see them here in a photograph that was taken on the day of the third apparition, 13th of July. Let's now look at a set of 13 dry photographic plates that the photographer Jude Roy took on that Saturday morning. The phenomenon started shortly after solar noon, when the sun is at its zenith. At Fatima that day, the solar zenith was reached at 42 degrees of altitude. We'll need this piece of data later, and you will find that on the backside of your handout. I'll be presenting the photographic plates by the order they are cataloged in the archives, and there is no detail in the plates to allow us to establish a temporal sequence for the plates. These are small glass plates. They measure roughly 12 centimeters by 9 centimeters. We are looking at plate D107 that shows us a good overall view of the hollow called Cova de Iria, already filled with a large crowd. Just a note that the projector here is not making justice to these photographic plates, but if you go and look at the live streaming, it will preserve the quality, and these are actually very good photographs in terms of contrast and detail. So who was this photographer, Jude Roy, that took these 13 plates? He was born in 1892 in Faro, and he went to Lisbon, where he graduated as an engineer. Roy was the last-minute replacement to accompany the journalist of Lindy Almeida on his field trip to Fatima to report on that last day of the apparitions, and more on this Avelino journalist later in this talk. Father Philippe Dallaire wrote a very important scientific article on these 13 photographs. I'll be quoting from his article throughout my talk, and I brought with me a printed copy of his article if you are curious to see the article here. He describes Roy's photo kit as follows, quote, "The press camera was cumbersome, with a tripod, vertical adjustment system, dark cape to handle the sensitive glass plates. It took skill and speed to choose a place, mount and focus the camera, calibrate and adjust the viewing angles, calculate exposure time, place and remove the plate in the dark, take the picture all in 1 minute," end quote. These are incredible photographs, if we consider they were taken by an amateur photographer under very challenging conditions. The next plate shows us the same crowd, now with their umbrellas open to protect them from the pouring rain. Here's the key fact, the sky was not clear that morning. In this plate, near the top left edge, we can see at least one automobile. The vehicle is probably near the only road that at the time crossed these fields. A small number of fortunate people managed to travel by car to Fatima, a luxury, while the majority went on foot, and some on barefoot. I couldn't resist showing you a zoom of this little girl's face at the bottom of the plate. Was she curious about Roy's photographic apparatus? That little girl was hardly the only one interested in the photographer, as we can see with these two other curious gentlemen on the right side of the plate. And although several other people were looking back, as one can see by zooming in, it's also true that many were gazing at the skies. And here we have a few other curious ones on the bottom of this plate, bottom right of this plate, looking back to Rua at close distance. The somewhat relaxed atmosphere allows us to speculate that perhaps the phenomenon was yet to start, or else no one would be paying any attention to the photographer. Hua had to deal with a low-light environment throughout the phenomenon. This plate is the best one to illustrate how difficult it was for him to get a good dynamic range, as we see that the lower half of the plate is just too dark. It also shows a large crowd, and this is just a narrow part of it, just a narrow angle of a full circle field filled with people. Let's now hear one of the eyewitnesses that we can actually identify in one of the plates. This is Jerónim Vieira. He went to Covadiria Fátima accompanied by two friends. His account appeared a decade ago in a local newspaper. Quote, "Everything he saw marked him so deeply that he became a passionate defender of the apparitions, to the point of being sought out in his homeland by unknown people who wanted to hear him talk about the miracle he had witnessed. I was there and saw everything," he said excitedly. "Before, it rained heavily. Then the sun shone and began to dance. I saw it." Many of those who listened to him became pilgrims of Fatima. His enthusiasm did not escape the attention of the police, who questioned him on this. "I am a man of my word," he replied firmly. And he was. So hence he was later appointed regidor of a local parish. And this role of regidor was a sort of a local magistrate, representing the central government and in charge of upholding the law. Here we can see that many are now kneeling and praying. One can only deduce that the phenomenon has started at the stage and perhaps has reached its dramatic climax. For this plate, let's follow Father Yaki. Quote, "Hua was obviously equipped with a good camera. He memorably captured the facial expressions of the crowd as they looked toward the sky in rapt admiration of the miracle taking place under their very eyes. But the wide swaths of the sky, as they appeared on Hua's photos, are uniformly light gray. No trace there of clouds rushing through the sky, let alone of a whirling wheel of fire, which the sun appeared to be. All this is a question about the ability of good cameras of those days to record fast-moving atmospheric phenomena," end quote. And this is a great plate. It's a well-known plate with impressive contrast, considering the low ambient light. Says Father Dallaire on his article, quote, "Hua seems to have compensated for this low light by a longer exposure and a wider aperture, giving a background blurred effect," which you can see on the top of the plate, "by reducing the depth of the field to a few meters," end quote. Plate D116 is damaged with some missing parts of the glass plate. That's why it has this strange shape. Still, it's a great plate to see the muddy terrain on the bottom where many were standing barefoot. In this plate, one can see the wooden portico at the top center. So you see the portico against the sky background, marking the spot where the seers were located. So I'm going to zoom in, not zooming in, but showing a different picture taken some days afterwards, where we see the three children in front of this wooden portico or arch. And behind them, probably it's hard to see with the, oh, you can see that, yeah. Behind them, that is what's left of the whole mosque on top of which they saw Our Lady. And this, of course, is because pilgrims would take away leaves and branches with them as a souvenir, and this picture was taken the week after the miracle of the sun, and so by then nothing much was left of the whole mosque. Father Dallaire, quote, "The apparitions were marked by a rustic arch, criminally destroyed on October 22, 1917. A chapel replaced it in 1919, criminally blown up in March 6, 1922, end quote. So these are tough times, as we can see, to be a Christian. The chapel of the apparitions that you visit today is located on this very same spot. Here's another impressive plate, clearly taken when the phenomenon was still underway. Father Dallaire, quote, In contrast, most witnesses were amazed that the distinct sun could be fixed without effort or danger, except for two or three moments where one had to look away or protect oneself with a hand. So you can see some of the examples of people protecting themselves briefly with their hand. On this last plate, one sees the youngest seer, Jacinta, being carried by an unnamed man that some conjecture to be a bus driver. Perhaps the most spectacular scientific finding yet to date regarding the miracle of the sun is Father Dallaire's analysis of these 13 photoplates and his computation based on shadow analysis that the main light source that here he names LSA had an elevation of only 28 degrees. So from the horizon up, 28 degrees. If we consider that around solar noon that day, the sun had an elevation of 42 degrees, we get a difference of 14 degrees. This means that the main light source was 14 degrees lower than the actual sun. And Father Dallaire also estimates error margins to be around one order of magnitude below the computed elevation difference. So this is not something coming from error. By evidently excluding that the sun itself could be lower than it should be on that October morning, because that wasn't seen by any observatory, we have here a confirmation that the main light source illuminating the scene captured in this plate was not the sun, but something else. Let's now turn to the eyewitnesses. Father Yaki, quote, "Any reasoned account of the miracle of the sun depends on making available the written record of what eyewitnesses have stated," end quote. Throughout his published work on this topic, the one thing that got Father Yaki really annoyed, really annoyed, was disregard for eyewitness accounts. That's what he meant when he wrote that many authors didn't do their homework. And for that reason, you know, they were faced with multiple inconsistencies just because of their bad data. So let's now give voice to the eyewitnesses. Only by listening to them carefully can we suggest reasonable explanations. In the interest of time, I've made a small selection of excerpts for this presentation, but I'll also show you the statistical data that I've compiled based on all the accounts that I've gathered in my book. This is one of the most valuable of all eyewitnesses, a lady called Maria Campos. This lady is one of the few people to provide us with a crucial detail that there was a snow-white moving form distinct from the sun, which tells us the moving object was not the sun. Quote, "Our impression of discouragement was great when suddenly we hear from all sides, 'Miracle, look at the sun!' The rain had stopped as if by magic. The hats were closed. A heat was felt as if we were entering a heated greenhouse. And the sun's disk began to be seen, to be clearly seen in the brownish layer that covered the whole sky. The heat increased, and the sun seemed to go down more and more, presenting new and varied changes. We saw it as a silver veil, with a rounded shape, as if it were the full moon. Shortly thereafter, it changed to bright purple, then to the red, then to the emerald green, and finally took on its primitive color. Screams were heard from all sides when it stood out from the sun, as if it were a snow-white form, shiny, without hurting the retina, coming towards us, returning to the sun again, and finally hiding the third time between the clouds." End quote. Our next eyewitness is José Maria de Almeida Garret, a lawyer. He went to Fatima accompanied by his mother, Maria Joaquina, and eventually by his father, Gonçalo, a professor of mathematics at Coimbra. And curiously, Gonçalo Garret, the father, had a PhD on the solar system, which is a curious detail. I say that his father eventually accompanied him because the extant documentation doesn't allow us to establish with certainty whether Garret the father was an eyewitness at Fatima or not. Still, his son, José Maria, that we see here in the picture, wrote a detailed and important account of what he saw. This is a well-known account, and it's quite a long account, so I'm just going to show you some excerpts. And this account has been in English for several days now, translated, and it contains a critical piece of data regarding the interaction between the light from the sun and moving cirrus clouds. Quote, "The celestial dome was misted with light cirrus, with cracks of blue here and there, but the sun sometimes stood out in streaks of clear sky. The clouds that ran lightly from west to the east did not obscure the light, which did not hurt, from the sun, giving the easily understandable and explainable impression of passing behind the sun. But sometimes those flakes that came white seemed to take on, gliding before the sun, a diaphanous pink or blue tint, end quote. The crucial detail here is the impression of clouds passing behind the sun, which shows that people were not actually seeing the sun, but some virtual image of it. His account was sent by his mother, Maria Joaquina, to Canon Formigão, the well-known defender of the Fatima apparitions. Here's how she introduces her son's account to Father Formigão. Quote, "Your Excellency, only today," this was 2 months after the miracle of the sun, "only today did my lazy son give me the report I had asked him to write about what he saw at Fatima. He missed something that he accidentally left out of his writing, that he saw 3 times the rotation of the sun," end quote. Another interesting detail from this lady is found in an earlier letter that Maria Joaquina wrote to Canon Formigão, and this letter was on October the 14th, the day after the miracle of the sun. Quote, "Does Your Excellency know that here at Granja, there are people that saw the movement of the sun's rotation and the pink cloud passing in front of the sun?" End quote. And Granja is a beach near Porto, and you're talking about a distance of 200 kilometers northwest of Fatima. I now want to show you my own attempt at a sort of a synopsis of the accounts compiled in my book, including some additional accounts that Father Yaki was not aware of, or he didn't include in his books on the topic. A careful comparison of these accounts makes it clear that the phenomenon had 3 distinct phases. And you can see a definition of them in your handout. So I wanted to put the definition in the handout because I'm going to be talking about phase 2, phase 3, and so the handout might be useful. So, rainy morning, overcast sky, fully covered sun, mud flat in Covadilla. This is how it started. Shortly after solar noon, the rain stops suddenly. 3 times, a smoke column, white smoke column, rises near the children, but nothing is burning there. People compare it to a cloud of incense, but there is nothing burning there. Lucia tells the crowd to close their umbrellas and look at the sun. Phase 1 starts. The sun becomes clearly visible and clearly shaped, but the sky is not clear. It's possible to look at the sun without injuring the eyes or damaging the retina. Then we have phase 2. The sun's outline seems to rotate on itself, sparkling. It emits multiple colors that affect people's faces and clothing, and even the landscape. Then we have phase 3, the climax. A sort of disc seems to detach itself from the sun, increases in size, and moves down and up a few times. People react with intense fear, and you can imagine why. The air was warm, and wet clothes were drying just too quickly for that time of the year. After around 10 minutes, the sun returns to its normal state, and it's no longer possible to look at it. By looking at the pictures, we can attest both the heavy rain, but also the sudden drying of the clothes. This is figure 4 from Father Dallaire's article, with this detail of a boy kneeling on the muddy ground. It's a crop from plate D115 we saw earlier. And Father Dallaire points out that we can clearly see the boy's pants soaked from the rain, that's region S, above the red line that I have put there for clarity. So above the red line, we have the soaked area of his pants. And below the red line, we see a clear change in color that shows the boy's pants were mostly dried from that point down, regions marked D, except for a small wet patch, region W. Father Dallaire, quote, "The 5 inches of the upper part of his pants are soaked, explainable by his jacket's recent undoing, probably because of the heat radiated by light source LSA. While the areas exposed to LSA for a few moments are dry, the strong contrast between the wet and dry areas invalidate the unfounded assertions of the absence of substantial rain closely preceding the event. This also confirms the eyewitness accounts of fast evaporation in October by a heating source," end quote. This graph summarizes my findings on how the eyewitnesses describe the phenomenon and its parts. My sample contains 150 accounts out of a universe that is estimated within 30 to 50,000 eyewitnesses. So yes, we only have a small number of accounts compared to the estimated number of eyewitnesses on site. But the accounts are quite diverse, gathered from people of all ages, social backgrounds, and literacy levels. 79% of the accounts mention one of the three phases, one or more of the phases. 27% of the accounts mention all three of them. Still, 19% of the accounts are so poor on details that we can't distinguish the phases in them. It's worth noting that I found two accounts by Catholic ladies that didn't see, to their great sorrow, what everyone else was seeing. I've marked these difficult accounts with the label "saw nothing" in this chart. And I also found two other accounts that don't fit the synopsis because they somehow downplay what was seen and seem to be denying, although ambiguously, what everyone else saw. I've marked them with a different label, "ambiguous saw nothing." Although difficult to explain, these four exceptions cannot overrule the concordance of all the other majority accounts. 29% of them tells us that the sun didn't hurt the eyes and was easy to see. Some accounts even use the word retina. 13% mention the heat and the quick drying of the wet clothes. And finally, 8% mentioned the interesting smoke column phenomenon. Motivated by Professor Bonnevac's presentation yesterday, I'm curious to see how we could apply Bayes' theorem to these numbers. Even if we consider only the accounts that mention all three phases, we have 41 independent eyewitnesses' accounts that detail the three phases. This makes for a very strong case when compared with other miracle accounts. Now, having summarized what was seen, let's now consider possible explanations. Let's first consider the natural explanation of fraud. And by fraud, I mean the idea that people were lying about what they saw. The main objection to this fraud explanation is the presence of skeptical eyewitnesses, like the journalist of Lindy Almeida. So he went together with the photographer Jude Roy. He was the chief editor of the Lisbon daily O Século, a periodical that was always ready to share its Republican, secular, and even anti-clerical views on daily events. When on the eve of the miracle, Avelino caught a train that would take him to Fatima, accompanied by the photographer Roy, he left an article ready for printing. That article was published in the Saturday edition of O Século. Let's hear some excerpts of this article written before his departure to Fatima, while he was still a skeptical. Quote, "Let devout hearts not be saddened or disturbed, candid and faithful souls not troubled or alarmed. Far be it from us to scandalize those who sincerely believe and whom the marvelous still today attracts, seduces, enchants, consoles, and strengthens, as it did in the past, 1,000 years ago, and it will certainly happen in another 1,000 years. It will always be considered in opposite ways, by some as a warning and grace from heaven, by others as a sign and proof that the superstitious and fanatical spirit has deep and costly roots, if not impossible to root out. Times of great trials never stopped favoring, stimulating the rejuvenation of religious ideas, and war, so World War I was underway, of course, war is one of the most propitious and fruitful environments for their expansion," end quote. So we can clearly agree there is, we see here the skeptic man's irony coming out of his pen, right? So after having seen the phenomenon, here's now what Avelino writes some days later, quote, when I no longer imagined that I would see anything more impressive than this noisy but peaceful crowd, what did I see as truly strange on the heath of Fatima? The rain stopping at the pre-announced time, the dense massive clouds breaking and the starking matte silver disk in full zenith appearing and starting dancing in a violent and convulsed ballet, which a large number of people imagined to be a serpentine dance, so beautiful in bright colors successfully coated the solar surface. Miracle, as the people shouted, natural phenomenon, as they say. I don't pretend to know it, but just to affirm what I saw, the rest is with science and the church, end quote. So Avelino was so impressed by what he saw that day that on the very same day, he stopped by at the postal office at Oran, and he wrote a postcard to his sister Augusta. And he starts the postcast, you know, in a friendly, you know, older brother kind of thing. Augustinha, I saw extraordinary things, which I will tell you later. There were about 40,000 people, end quote. So the postcard shows the state of mind right after the phenomenon. Here we see Avelino's two main articles in the press on the miracle of the sun. The first one came out on Monday, October 15th, and is the one that angered many of his skeptical colleagues. So Avelino was a secular journalist, right? So his colleagues were scandalized by this. According to them, Avelino betrayed the secular cause. The second article is the one we've just quoted in the previous slide. And the second article was published in Ilustração Portuguesa, the weekly social events magazine that was owned by the journal O Século. Another example of a skeptical eyewitness is Luís Vasconcelos, the Baron of Alvaiazre. He was a lawyer, and at the time he was an official of the civil registry in the town of Orém. According to historian Costa Bruxado, the Baron, quote, went to Covadiria for recreation, completely in disbelief, considering everything he had heard as mere blague. There he met numerous friends with whom he commented ironically on the facts, which really upset his friends that were at the time already convinced of the supernatural nature of the apparitions, end quote. Let's hear so what Baron has to say about what he saw. I was absolutely convinced that I would see nothing. I remember then that principle of Gustave Le Bon, that an individual in a collective cannot escape the hypnotic current that dominates it. It was necessary to be cautious, not to be influenced. The sky at that moment was a leaden color. The rain had stopped. The sun could not be seen covered by clouds, and no one would say that it would appear again on that rainy and uneven day. At 1 o'clock sharp, I hear a great outcry. These friends of mine shout at me, look, look, but at first I just saw clouds running lightly, leaving the sun out. Suddenly, I see an intense pink border surrounding the sun that resembled a matte silver disk, as someone has said, while giving me the impression that it was moving from its original position. Diaphanous, vaporous clouds, somewhat purple, somewhat orange, pervaded. At various points on the horizon, in contrast to the sky's leaden color, I also saw pink and yellow spots. The outcry was growing. This did not last seconds. It maybe lasted minutes. In observing these manifestations, which I did not doubt for a moment were due to the infinite omnipotence of God, an indescribable impression came over me. I only know that I'd shouted, I believe, I believe, I believe. And tears fell from my eyes in wonder, ecstasy at this manifestation of divine power. Let's go to the second possible explanation, or natural explanation, sometimes called mass hallucination. So here it goes. The crowd at Fatima, they wanted so much to see the miracle that they hallucinated together, believing they were seeing something real. Psychologists do study the phenomena of hallucination, but on an individual level. So if mass hallucination was the case, people should hallucinate differently. But at Fatima, they don't. By comparing eyewitnesses, we see that they converge on the essentials and only diverge on details. Here is psychologist Gerhard van Aardweg, quote, we know of no well-documented cases in which a stiffened mass reached such surprising imaginations. Visions in situations of mass hysteria are characterized by ambiguity, by the fact that they are not seen by everyone, and that reports are generally confusing and contradictory. Furthermore, generally speaking, hallucination consists of fragmentary images rather than a coherent flow of events, end quote. Still, the strongest objection we can make to the mass hallucination hypothesis comes from eyewitnesses that were located outside of Fatima. Let's hear from them. Afonso Lopes Vieira was located 34 kilometers northwest of Fatima at his beach house in São Pedro de Moel. Quote, on that 13th of October 1917, I, who did not remember the prediction of the little shepherds, was enchanted by a dazzling spectacle in front of me, for me entirely unprecedented, which I watched from that balcony, end quote. Then we have Albano Barros, who at the time was a young shepherd boy tendering his family's flock somewhere around Minde, and this is 12 kilometers south of Fatima, quote, I was watching sheep, as was my daily task. And suddenly there, in the direction of Fatima, I saw the sun fall from the sky. I thought it was the end of the world. I was so distracted that I remember nothing but the falling sun. I cannot even remember whether I took the sheep home, whether I ran, or what I did. End quote. So we can imagine, you know, explaining this to the mother or the father, right? So the third eyewitness account is a lady called Guilhermina Silva. She lived in Liria, city of Liria, 16 kilometers northwest of Fatima. Quote, but I couldn't go because my husband was an unbeliever. I was looking toward the mountain at noon when suddenly I saw a great red flash in the sky. End quote. The next one is Inácio Pereira, a boy from the village of Alburitel, 13 kilometers northeast of Fatima. He left two long testimonies in English, because he lived in India, so he was using the local language. Let's hear excerpts from the first one, given in 1931. Quote, I was only 9 years old at the time and attended the first school of letters in my village. It was about noon when we were startled by the shouts and exclamations of some men and women who passed the street in front of our school. The people cried and screamed, pointing to the sun. It was the great miracle, which was seen distinctly from the top of the mountain where my land is located. I was staring at the sun, and it looked pale, and it didn't blind the eyes. It was like a snow globe rotating on itself. Then suddenly, it looked like it was zigzagging, threatening to fall on the ground. Terrified, I ran to get in the middle of the people. Everyone wept, waiting at any moment for the end of the world. Next to us was an unbeliever without religion who had spent the morning making fun of the simpletons who were doing all that walking to Fatima to go and see a girl. I looked at him. He was paralyzed, astonished, with his eyes fixed on the sun. Then I saw him tremble from head to toe and raising his hands to the sky. So this is the unbeliever. He fell on his knees in the mud shouting, Our Lady, Our Lady. Meanwhile, people continued to scream and cry, asking God for forgiveness of their own sins. Then we ran to the two chapels in the village, which in a few moments were filled. During these long minutes of the solar phenomenon, the objects around us reflected all the colors of the rainbow. Looking at each other, one looked blue, another yellow, another red, etc. All these strange phenomena increased the terror of the people. After about 10 minutes, the sun returned to its place, just as it had descended, still pale and without splendor. When the people were convinced that the danger was gone, there was an explosion of joy. Everyone broke into a chorus of thanksgiving. Miracle, miracle, blessed be Our Lady. Besides refuting the mass hallucination hypothesis by being outside of Fatima, the accounts that we've just heard provide us with a valuable piece of data. As Father Allaire describes in figure 8 of his article, eyewitnesses outside of Fatima at some point were looking towards Fatima as the epicenter of their attention and not always southwards towards the sun. Here we have a clear evidence that they weren't always looking at the sun all the time, or else they'd be looking southwards. Let's now consider another common category of explanations, illusions called by sun gazing. The main proposer of this type of explanation is August Misson, with his 2003 article. In this short excerpt, we see that Misson distinguishes retinopathies caused by dangerous exposure of the retina to solar radiation from after images. These are illusions produced at the retinal level. And then from after effects, and this third case results from the neural processing in the brain. But although Misson is confident in these explanations, they don't match with the accounts we have. As we have seen, observers outside of Fatima were looking towards Fatima and not always towards the sun. So that alone makes it difficult to use sun-gazing causes. Still, you might want to apply these explanations to what was seen by the crowd at Fatima. At this stage, because of the highly technical nature of the topic, I recommend Father Allaire's article for a detailed and thorough refutation of Misson's theories. But Father Allaire points out that our lawyer, José Almeida Garrett, did a quick decisive test on site. He did a test both during the miracle of the sun and a test some days later. Quote, he turned his back on the sun without any blinded sunspot following his gaze. Yet a few days later, a short look at the sun did not produce a purple uniform color, but spots and specks that moved with the movement of the gaze. These localized spots were very different from what he saw in Fatima. And so his testimony formally contradicts the hypothesis of solar phosphenes, end quote. The next and final category is weather phenomena. This category seems to be the most promising one to explain what was seen at Fatima. And Father Iacchi himself, as we will see, prefers this type of explanation. But, and this is crucial, he is not suggesting that what happened was a well-known or a naturally occurring phenomenon. Weather phenomena can be quite complex. It's really hard to find the right combination of factors that could explain what was seen, you know, the delicate sequence of phases 1, 2, and 3. Let's first consider iridescent clouds, of which you can see an example on the left image. In this case, what is called a Pileus cloud. I'm now quoting from the website Atmospheric Optics, quote, "What makes Pileus clouds truly remarkable is their ability to diffract sunlight at high altitudes, creating a breathtaking display of iridescence. The droplets within Pileus clouds are all of similar size and do not have time to evolve, making them ideal for diffracting sunlight into vibrant colors. However, this iridescence is short-lived, often lasting only 1 or 2 minutes. Therefore, witnessing this phenomenon is truly a stroke of luck," end quote. This phenomenon is different from what was seen at Fatima during phase two for at least two reasons. One, the rainbow colors at Fatima were seen around the solar disk. And two, at Fatima, the colors were rotating fast. Then on the right side, we can see an example of a rare, what's called a 22-degree halo, accompanied by the even rarer phenomenon of parelia, or sun dogs. And the sun dogs are the two sun-like images that appear on both sides of the halo. Halos are formed when solar light is refracted in tiny hexagonal ice crystals in the air. Their intensity typically reduces with solar elevations beyond 40 degrees. So, you know, above 40 degrees, you just don't see these halos, making them imperceptible. But at solar noon, the sun at Fatima had an elevation of 42 degrees. The characteristic shape of the 22-degree halo with the sun disk in the middle, with or without sun dogs, was not described by any of the accounts. Also, parelia don't change the perceived elevation of the sun. So we can exclude both the iridescence on the left and the parelia explanations on the right. Let's now consider solar coronas, of which we can see an example here, taken near the Himalayas. So this image comes from NASA's website, Astronomy Picture of the Day. It's quite an amazing picture. Quote, "The corona effect is created by the quantum mechanical diffraction of light around individual, similarly sized water droplets in an intervening but mostly transparent cloud. Since light of different colors has different wavelengths, each color diffracts differently. Solar coronae are one of the few quantum color effects that can be easily seen with the unaided eye," end quote. This phenomenon has striking similarities with phase two at Fatima because it takes place around the solar disk, it involves a thin layer of clouds, and it generates the colors of the rainbow via diffraction. But could phase two at Fatima be a corona? I believe not, because accounts mention a spinning circumference, not a solar disk, but only its border, with a clearly cut border around the sun. This corona shows multiple colored borders, not just around the sun, but farther away. Okay, you can still see the, you know, the multiple rings, right? Even more intriguing, that spinning border was sending out colored rays that were so strong, so intense, and earthbound that they painted the terrestrial landscape, using the words of the accounts. For these reasons, I believe we have to exclude coronas as a potential explanation for phase two. The first academic to ever suggest that the phenomenon could be approached with weather science was Gonçalo Almeida Garret. We've talked about him, teacher of mathematics at Coimbra. His son was at Fatima and gave a long testimony, as we have seen. So this is a quote that comes from a letter that the professor wrote to Canon Formigão with a description of the phenomenon. As I've mentioned, there is uncertainty regarding whether the professor was at Fatima that day. So it might be the case that the professor in his letter is describing what his family saw and is giving his learned scientist's opinion on what his family saw. Quote, "Responding to Your Excellency, I will say that I do not consider the phenomena seen and observed in the sun as astronomical of the sun itself, but rather meteorological of the atmosphere of the earth on the solar image as to the color and appearance of brightness phase one, where the sun looked like the moon, and also regarding the view of rotation, which is the subsequent phases. So this testimony was written less than 2 months after the miracle of the sun. Our second academic is another mathematics teacher at Coimbra, this time Diogo Amorim. And Diogo Amorim was a member of parliament and one of the founders of the Catholic Center Party in Portugal. Let's read a short excerpt from his very important article published in 1960, a long article that contains a lot of eyewitness accounts. Quote, so this is the conclusion that he arrives at after looking at the eyewitness accounts. Of course, it was neither the sun nor the earth, nor one of the other simultaneously that moved, because if that had happened, the machine of the world would have been dismantled. The movements were apparent, but to make them sensitive, something real should have happened. As for translational movements towards the earth, they can be explained by appropriate variations in the apparent diameter. The air lenses mentioned by the great American astronomer Donald Menzel, professor of astrophysics at Harvard University, would serve in extremely exceptional cases to explain these variations in the apparent diameter of the sun and possibly to explain the color variation. With the appropriate air lenses, its image generated by such lenses could appear inside of the sun, which could explain the translational movements, both slow and fast. Let's finally hear from Father Yaki, Father Yaki's conjecture regarding the miracle of the sun. Quote, it began at about 12:45 p.m. solar time, after the rain suddenly stopped and lasted about 10 to 15 minutes. During all that time, the sun, that had not been seen for hours, appeared through thin clouds, which one careful observer described as cirrus clouds. That's our lawyer, José Almeida. Suddenly, the sun's image turned into a wheel of fire, which for the people there resembled a roda de fogo, familiar to them in the fireworks. So this corresponds to phase two. The physical core of that wheel was, as we now have to conjecture, an air lens full of ice crystals, as cirrus clouds are. Such crystals can readily refract the sun's rays into various colors of the rainbow. The reference to the strong west-east wind and to the continued drift of clouds may account for the interplay of two streams of air that could give a twist, in a way analogous to the formation of tornadoes, to put that lens-shaped air mass into rotation. Note that up until now, Father is commenting on what I've called phase two. So the sun is still, spinning, but in the same place. Phase three, as we will see, will require the ascending and descending movement of this conjectured air lens full of ice crystals. Let's continue with Father Yaki's quote. Since many present there suddenly felt a marked increase in temperature, so see how this relates to the drying of the clothes, it's clear that a sudden temperature inversion must have taken place. The cold and warm air masses could conceivably propel that rotating air lens into an elliptical orbit, first towards the Earth, and then push it up as if it were a boomerang back to its original position. So this would be phase three of the phenomenon. Meanwhile, the ice crystals in it acted as so many means of refraction for the sun's rays. Some eyewitnesses claim that the wheel of fire descended and reascended three times. According to others, this happened twice. Only one observer, a lawyer, and this is our baron, stated that the path of descent and ascent was elliptical, with small circles superimposed on it. Such an observation would make eminent sense to anyone familiar with fluid dynamics or even with the workings of a boomerang. So now we have here Father's conjecture about phase three. This air lens is already in rotation from phase two, and it's now propelled to downwards and upwards by a vertical gush of air. That could be explained by what Father Yaki calls the temperature inversion, but I probably think we could designate this as a heat burst. And a heat burst is a rare atmospheric phenomenon that suddenly increases the air temperature at the Earth's surface. Heat bursts are similar to downbursts, but warm instead of cold. It's the combination of the rotational movement with this new translational movement that Father compares with the workings of a boomerang. Father Yaki, there is indeed plenty of scientific information on hand to approach the miracle of the sun scientifically. This is, however, not to suggest that one could reproduce the event, say, in a wind tunnel. The carefully coordinated interplay of so many physical factors would by itself be a miracle. Clearly, the miracle of the sun was not a mere meteorological phenomenon, however rare. Otherwise, it would have been observed before and after, regardless of the presence of devout crowds or not. I merely claim, which I did in my other writings on miracles, that in producing miracles, God often makes use of a natural substratum by greatly enhancing its physical components and their interactions, end quote. So clearly the meteorological line of investigation that Father Jacques is proposing is superior in terms of divine economy, while also establishing a firm ground for a real observed miracle. So we are in the last closing slides of the presentation. If I could only show a slide, it would be this one. So let's keep in mind that this phenomenon was predicted 3 months in advance by an illiterate shepherd girl that was 10 years at the time. She got the date, the time, and the epicenter correctly. When she was interrogated by the local parish priest the day after the third apparition, this is what she said, quote, "I knelt again and asked her, 'What do you want from me?' 'I want to tell you to come back here on the 13th. And she said more, "Pray the rosary to Our Lady of Fatima, of the rosary, so that she will slow down the war, because only she can help. I have hereby request if you can convert a woman from Pedrógão and one from Fatima, and if a boy from Moita can get better." She said she would convert and improve them within a year. I said, "Make a miracle so that everyone will believe. 3 months from now, I will make everyone believe." But where are the details about the miracle? Just a sign, without any details. So there's another account that comes with details. This is a lady called Maria Pereira. This lady was, in the miracle of the sun, she was near Lúcia and her mother. And look at the detail here. She hears this very important sentence said by Lúcia, the child. Leaning over to the mother, who was nearby, but without turning to the people, she said louder, "Our Lady says, look at the sun, as she wants to manifest herself in the stars." Another interesting detail that comes from Mother Maria, Mother Fonseca. She was a well-known expert and archivist on Fatima, and she also was an eyewitness in Alboritel. And she has this very important account where she mentions that people were already expecting the miracle to take place in the stars, to the point that some people of her village came prepared with rudimentary protection measures, darkened pieces of glass, to be able to stare at the skies and at the sun. So the final verdict, final question, was the phenomenon a miracle or not? Father Jacques, the miraculous character of this air lens must be looked for in the formation that was created over the Covadilla and in the prediction of the moment made by Lúcia months before, as well in the fact that the air lens, being so fragile, maintained its form for about 15 minutes after describing two or three elliptical paths in the direction of the Earth. The explanation of the event through an air lens satisfactory accounts for a complex set of events that are miraculous in the sense that they are unpredictable and very rare. The idea of an air lens is not offered as an explanation of the miracle of the sun. It's merely offered as a physical phenomenon within which the miracle of the sun does not present logical contradictions and unnecessary scientific difficulties. And the last slide is a question I want to pose as a counterfactual. Was this bound to happen or not without Lucius asking for it? If the answer is no, the event was not bound to happen, then it was a miracle. And its prediction also required a supernatural explanation. And both the prediction and the phenomenon attest to the truth of the message of Fatima. If instead the answer is yes, the phenomenon was bound to happen anyway, then you would say that the phenomenon itself, although vanishingly improbable, was not a miracle. Even in this case, because of the need of a supernatural explanation for the prediction, the combined prediction plus phenomenon is enough to attest the message of Fatima. In my talks with Father Dalla, I became aware even more of the enormous difficulties surrounding any attempt to explain what was seen at Fatima using weather science. Still, I think we should continue to investigate the phenomenon from this angle, making use of the latest weather simulators to get closer more and more to the accounts. Not to disprove the miraculous nature of what happened that day, but the opposite, to better ground the miraculous nature of the phenomenon. As Father Jacques wrote so eloquently, quote, "A mystery which is logical should be greatly preferred to one which is illogical," end quote. And we've reached the end of the presentation on the miracle of the sun, or probably of something else, as Father Jacques would say. Thank you very much.